you a high performer, obsessed with growth, and looking for an edge? Welcome to Mind Body Peak Performance. Together, we'll discover underground secrets to unlocking the full potential of your mind, body, and spirit. We'll learn from some of the world's leading minds, from ancient wisdom to cutting-edge tools and everything in between. This is your host, Nick Urban. Enjoy the episode. David, it's great to have you on the show.
It's all about perseverance, you know, innovation,
yes.
Solving problems. That's what we're doing here. So
precisely. So share with us something interesting about your expertise, and that is air and improving air quality.
Something interesting about my expertise. So I guess I come at it from the technology angle. So we invest in technologies. And so air is one component of that, just like it probably is for you. And so this company we invested in about 15 years ago. And over that time, I've spoken to, I want to say at least probably 1,000 clients with severe air quality issues. And that's kind of been one of the biggest impacts for me, is hearing from our clients on what they're dealing with. And then over the years, we try to solve those problems. So I guess maybe that's an interesting thing about me. But we're constantly innovating. We're basically coming at it from how can we fix what's wrong.
How big of a problem is indoor air quality? Because I know I've heard some stats. And when I first heard them, I was in disbelief. And then when I kept coming across them and hearing them and reading them, it seems like whether or not we actually are sensitive to the air and whether we realize that, that's a whole other conversation. But it impacts all of us.
Yeah, I mean, globally, it's a massive issue. On a personal level, I think it's one piece of the puzzle, and sometimes it's a much larger piece of the puzzle for some people. So I speak to a very large percentage of people that have very severe reactions. But on a global level, I mean, it leads to a lot of deaths, cancer, everything. And then for all of us, it can impact sleep, it can impact how we feel. And then depending on your sensitivities. I mean, you might be one person out of five in a home and you can't think, you can't function because you're allergic to mold in the bathroom. But the other four people, they're fine. But it's just like, you know, if you think about toxins in water, you breathe about a swimming pool's worth of air every day. Depending on what's in that air is what you're exposed to. And then how your body reacts to it, what else you're dealing with, that's how big of an impact it can have on you. And definitely lifestyle. I mean, if you're trying to be healthy and your neighbor's smoking a pack of cigarettes every day and it comes into your bedroom, that's not a pleasant experience. It varies a lot, but air is very complicated. And it can have very big impacts on society as a whole or as individuals.
And anything we can do to optimize our living environments or working environments or environments we spend a lot of time in can make a huge difference, because those are the things that are influencing our health for better or for worse all day, every day that we're in those environments.
And to us, like, we're not trying to create a bubble of nothingness that you live in. But if you can create safe places for your body to sleep, naturally detoxify, where you're spending most of your time, and then you can go out and be resilient in the world and be exposed to things. But if you're being inundated with extremely unnatural concentrations of toxins in the place where you're living and working and sleeping, then that can build up over time, really hamper you.
Yeah, I think if anything, it would be good to have a bubble to sleep in.
Exactly.
Because sleep is when all the repair and restoration and regeneration occur. So perhaps you don't want that all the time. It's good to have some of that exposure and build the hormesis, and so you don't become like the sterilization syndrome where hyper pristine, super sanitized environments constantly, the issues they have. But at the same time, if you're going to be in an optimized environment, it's most important when you're sleeping.
It's normally our clients that are asking the long-term questions of, in 20 years, if we get very successful with air quality, are we going to make the air too clean? And the answer is we're a long ways from that goal, for one thing. Most of our homes are very sick and unnatural. But the way we're trying to tackle this, we want to introduce natural processes that are mitigating. So you're reducing. You're not just trapping everything inside your home and then you have no counterbalance. But in the future, yeah, I mean, if we're trying to sterilize everything in all of our common spaces and we only live inside of these bubbles, that's a problem. But right now, having a safe place to sleep and work is really important to us.
I don't know if this exact stat is accurate, and I'm sure you can weigh in, but just to understand the directionality of it, I heard that the indoor air on average in the US is up to 7 times more contaminated and polluted than outdoor air, even in major cities.
Absolutely. Yeah. So like the CDC estimates 3 to 5 times and that we spend 90% of our time indoors. But if we think of the outside air as clean, which it's cleaner than the indoor air, then it's a bad thing. But it's not just one scale. So you could have outdoor air that is significantly cleaner when it comes to, say, particulates, but then your indoor air could be full of chemicals or vice versa. Sometimes we oversimplify air, but in general, indoor air is going to be essentially trapping everything inside. So if we bring in, you know, we paint the walls, we spray the floor, we're trapping things inside. And then humans are one of the biggest like sources of contaminants too. So we're bringing in all kinds of contaminants with us, just as we live and cook. And then whatever's outside, when it gets inside, now we trap it. And so something like mold, which you're going to naturally find outside, you can trap it inside, and then you create a perfect environment for it to grow. And so then it builds in concentrations.
Well, I certainly want to talk more about those specifics and mold and the contaminants that we introduce and proliferate in our environment. But before we do, what are the non-negotiables you've done so far today for your health, your performance, and your bioharmony?
So, I mean, personally, I mean, you mentioned it already, but to me, sleep is one of the biggest things. So if you can create a safe place for sleep, darkness, no tech, no news to sleep, I mean, to me, that's like the biggest thing. I've got 4 little kids, and when your sleep is off, everything else is off. So to me, that's really big. You know, exercise for me is really big. You know, air quality obviously is big. So I would say maybe those 3 things come to mind right now. But yeah, sleep, exercise, and air quality for me. So like if the indoor environment, you know, and a lot of these things, it's not just a daily habit. It's what you do long term. So it's the decisions you're making when you're purchasing products or the consumables you use, you know, the things you eat. So,
and out of those things, I have to say that I think that optimizing your air is the easiest, lowest hanging fruit, because it doesn't require motivation and willpower every day to either wind down early or to get your butt out of bed and go to the gym or go on a run. All it requires is making some changes, some improvements. Yeah, if necessary, hiring a building biologist to really help out. But then once you do that, unless you make some major changes or there's a flash flood or something, your air will stay relatively constant.
And there's a lot of times there's seasonal things that you're going to deal with. You know, sometimes summer brings its own challenges, winter brings its own challenges, depending on where you live, wildfires, you know, traffic pollution can be 50 times worse during that time versus an hour before. So there's lots of factors that are changing around us. But yeah, a lot of times these are just things that you do and you don't think about them again. You know, you just implement it. And right now, so I mentioned earlier to when we were just chatting before, that I'm in mid move. So like right now, a lot of my focus is, okay, new facilities, you know, what are we doing there, you know, and whatnot. So yeah, I'm thinking a lot about those things. But once you implement it, for the most part, there's very little ongoing.
Yeah. So how did you get involved in air and air quality to begin with? Did you suffer from a condition that was exacerbated by poor quality air?
I did. And what's funny is at the time, and not so much funny, but looking back, it is that I did not connect it at all with air. One of the places I was working overseas, I was doing business in Africa. Every time I was in the room, I was sneezing so much, I was sneezing blood. I didn't think anything of it. I mean, I just thought like, oh, this is a dirty room or something. And I was a relatively well-educated person, decently intelligent. I didn't connect the dots. And I see that with a lot of our clients too, where you might be experiencing something and you haven't ever been taught that it might be the environment around you, things you can't see, maybe you can't smell. So I did have that experience, but it was really for us is we were investing in the applications for the technology. So originally we were looking at, you know, food service, large commercial, large medical applications. And so when I first got involved, it was more theoretical. And then over the years, I've gotten very much more involved with our clients. But yeah, originally it was more theoretical, honestly, is the impact that this can have on a larger scale.
Yeah. I know that once I learned about the importance of air quality and I would go and stay in a moldy room or a room that had that distinct musty smell, I would definitely feel worse the next day. And I didn't know how much of it was because I was all of a sudden aware of the importance of air quality and how much was actually just because whatever was in the air was detrimental to my biology?
Both. What percentage of which is, it's hard to say, but we definitely get in our own heads. And if you're not sleeping well because you're worried, that's another thing. If you can smell it, it's progressed to such a point that it's pretty high. A lot of times you can't even smell it. You know, there's particulates that you're not going to be able to smell. There's chemicals you're not going to be able to smell. But a lot of times our noses are pretty sophisticated. And if you're smelling that mustiness, that's pretty much guaranteed it's mold.
And as you said, for some people, they'll be more sensitive to mold, and other people, it won't necessarily impact them. But even for the people who aren't sensitive, that probably doesn't benefit them to be in a room.
No. Just, the ultra fine particulates that we're talking about are going to be able to penetrate your body's natural defenses. So, our body can protect itself against dog hair and these, relatively large things in our environment. But when you talk about fragments of mold, some of these synthetic particulates, they're penetrating deep into your lungs. And then those particulates are carrying liquid chemicals on them, mycotoxins. Mold is going to be putting out mold VOCs. Living spores, dead spores. It's not good for you, but your body can deal with a lot of it. But then it's the concentration that starts to overwhelm the body.
Yeah. So more along the lines of your average person who doesn't necessarily know that of any acute sensitivities, they don't think they're mold sensitive per se. If they install a quality air filter in their bedroom, let's just say, what can they expect to notice change? Like, what's the benefit for your average person? Like, maybe a little better sleep, a little better cognition.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, it could be. So it's hard to measure what's not there. So when your body's no longer experiencing something, sometimes it's harder to track. But some of our clients that use, biometrics that really track those things can actually measure the impact. But sometimes it's, you're dealing with a wildfire, you got to have a tool to deal with that. That's on the basic level. Things like dust, you might have less dust, so you're seeing some of those things. And then however it's affecting your body is going to depend on what's there in the first place. Did you have a bad mold problem? Did you have, a neighbor that's smoking marijuana every morning and it really bothers you? What are the things already there? And then that's going to really determine the before and after. Because for some people, the air is, it's okay. And then your body's pretty resilient. You're getting good sleep. You're probably not going to see a huge immediate difference. But then for some people, it's going to be dramatic. You no longer see dust in the air, when the sunlight comes in, you're no longer coughing at night. So as a company, we're only talking about the environmental impact. So we can't make any health claims for a lot of government reasons, but also because, it is complicated. But what we want to do is we want to reduce your exposure, and then how that reduction impacts an individual can vary dramatically. We love to hear the great stories though of high contrast for sure.
Mm-hmm. I can think of a bunch of different things, like such as you were just mentioning. If you're looking around your house and you don't have to dust it as often because the air filter is pulling the dust out, then it's just one less thing that you have to do. And also from like the health and performance side, that air is going to be filtered either by you in your lungs and your systems or by an external system. And if your external system does it, it frees up more biological resources for your body to prioritize other things.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, it's got to go somewhere. Some of this stuff is eventually going to get out of the house, but a lot of it's got to go somewhere. So you're either going to vacuum it up, you're going to trap it in a furnace filter, you're going to trap it in an air purifier, you're going to suck it in.
Can you define some of the common terms that are thrown around in the air industry, such as VOCs and HEPA and PM 2.5 and a bunch of these different things?
So I guess starting with some of the categories of what we would put contaminants into, you mentioned a type of filter, and then you mentioned several types of contaminants. So from a contaminant perspective, we talk a lot about particulates. So the physical things in the air, that's what we'd normally just refer to it as. So that's your fragments of skin. From diesel exhaust, you'll have particles in the air of a certain diameter. So like a human hair is maybe 50 to 100 microns in diameter, roughly. PM 2.5 is 2.5 microns in diameter. So if a human hair is 50, 75, 100, 2.5 and lower is PM 2.5. And so a lot of times that is a somewhat of a buzzword because that category starts to get in a very penetrating size. And so it's able to penetrate filters, vacuums, your body, and go deeper and be more harmful. So PM 2.5 is common. PM 10 would be 10 microns. But then with something like a HEPA, HEPA is a third-party rating system. It's one of like three main rating systems for what we call a mechanical filter. And I think of them as a chain link fence. So if you think of a chain link fence, Big stuff gets caught, small stuff goes through. You're not going through it, a bumblebee's flying through it. And that's kind of what a mechanical filter is. So with a HEPA, it's rated on its ability to capture 0.03 microns. So not 2.5, not 50, but 0.03. And that's considered the most penetrating particle size, MPPS, because particles that are larger or smaller are easier to capture in that chain link fence. And so depending on if it can do, say, 99.9% or 99.5% or 99.995%, that's going to give it a score. In the HEPA field, one of the biggest sins, I guess, or most common problems is people either claim that they have a HEPA product that isn't. So it's HEPA-like, but it doesn't actually score good enough on the scale. And then the other thing is if you say you've got a super-duper ultra HEPA, and that's fake too, because you get a score. I often say it's like my son coming home with an ultra B plus. He either got an A minus or B plus. So you go, say like an H11 HEPA has a certain efficiency, H12 has a different efficiency. So a lot of companies don't say what grade their HEPA is. And then once you go beyond HEPA, it's a ULPA filter. It's not super HEPA, it's a different kind of filter. So all this like super ultra mega HEPA stuff is just fake. So it's just a rating system for efficiency. And so one of the things to consider with something like HEPA is you're trapping what passes through the filter, but you haven't addressed the source. And so with something like mold, you're trapping the spores that are coming off. You haven't addressed the source and you haven't killed it. You could potentially be growing mold in your HEPA and feeding it more organic material. And so then the HEPA, that chain link fence, is trapping the spores as best as it can. The spores are continuing to produce, say, in the bathroom. And then they're also producing, you mentioned, VOCs. So VOCs would be a volatile organic compound, a chemical. So it's a type of chemical. HEPA is going to have no impact on chemicals. That's why you see HEPA carbon combinations. So carbon is going to absorb chemicals like a sponge. Problem with carbon is once it's full, it's full. And when is it full? I don't know. You don't know. No one knows. So there's no way practically know when your carbon is full. There's some innovation in that space. Sometimes your carbon filter starts to smell. That's not a good sign. But it's just a sponge. So like carbon could be used for something like radon. Radon being pretty dangerous that's coming up from the ground. But once the carbon is full, now you have a concentrated source of radon. You haven't moved it anywhere. You haven't done anything with it. And you don't know when your carbon filter is full. Good technologies, but with limitations, right? And so, yeah, you mentioned those. A few others would be, so you got biological contaminants, things that are living. Some of them could have, some could be good, some could be bad. So bacteria, yeast, fungi, viruses, you know, all these things are in our environment. If you're exposed to too much of them and your body is run down, you know, they can cause infection. They can cause problems for you. So you have to have a biological mitigation strategy. And so if we're talking to a hospital, their standards for that are going to have to be much higher because you have someone that's, you know, you might be undergoing surgery and you don't want any getting in there, right? And so you have different standards and goals. But yeah, so particulates, chemicals, and then biologicals are some of the main categories that we look at.
And HEPA, your traditional HEPA, or your ultra or super or max HEPA, any of your HEPAs will only remove the
particles.
Will it remove? Yeah, particles, but will it also remove biologics?
It can remove biologicals if it's of a certain size. So something like a virus is very, very small, even smaller than mold. But HEPA can certainly trap some biological contaminants, but you haven't killed it. And so with the case of mold, we want to, in our kind of philosophy, we want to suppress the source, you know, kill it on the source, deal with the particulates, deal with the chemicals, and then deal with the dead spores. So the fragments in the dead spores. And so HEPA is one tool that you can use for that for sure. One of the drawbacks of HEPA is it's very, very expensive to implement on a large scale and maintain. But for a bedroom, we definitely recommend HEPA often for people that are having symptomatic reactions. So like you're coughing, you're sneezing, you're having a reaction to your environment, you know you have a mold allergy, getting an H13 HEPA in the bedroom is a good idea.
Yeah, I was going to ask, if someone has allergies, how often do you recommend they look into air filtration or improving their air quality?
How often? Like how often do we, if someone is first thinking about it?
Is it like a safe thing to assume that if you have allergies, it's going to hurt? Yeah. And it will likely...
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And our hope is that you reduce the total concentration you're exposed to, and then you become more resilient and less sensitive. A lot of times what we see is with people having you know, high reactions at home, now they're even more reactive to, you know, someone walks by them with a perfume. They're extremely reactive. They're extremely reactive to other chemicals or odors in the environment because their body's already dealing with as much as it can. Yeah, with someone with allergens, you know, my son, as an example, he's dealt with seasonal outdoor allergies. But if we can create a safe place in his home, then he can naturally detox and then hopefully be more resilient. And then his body doesn't build up those issues like in the lungs over time. And so then it's not as big a deal. You know, he's not as reactive. That's the hope. Yeah. You can go out and play, do your stuff, but then you come home, you have a safe space.
Yeah, that's what I usually end up wondering with these types of things. Like, okay, yeah, sure, you can make the home environment perfect. You can really get cross every T, dot every I, however it goes. And then is that actually going to help? Like when you go out into the real world, is it going to like train your body to be accustomed to this type of environment? And is it going to overreact when you go out into the real world? Or is it going to be more resilient when you go out to the real world and better fend off whatever it is?
So far, I don't think in 10 years we've ever seen a case of the overreaction side. I would say that when you travel, you might consider taking something with you. Because if you're going into an environment, you're used to having nice sleep. And then now you're in a really moldy, dusty, you know, 5-star hotel room that's has bad air quality. That might not be a great experience for you. But over the years, I've never seen a situation where someone becomes more reactive to the outdoor environment. It's actually just the opposite. So you want to create a safe place. Your natural sensitivities may still remain, you know, your natural allergies may still remain, you know, when you're exposed again, but ideally, you know, you have a safe place. So you're building that resilience. Yeah.
And then, so we talked about HEPA and then you mentioned the ULPA, was it?
That's not really relevant for most homes. So if you think about a filter's efficiency, a higher efficiency is not always better. You could have a pure steel filter that's really good at stopping particulates and really bad at airflow. So the higher the efficiency of the filter, the more dense it is in general, the harder it is to push air through it. So sometimes in a home, you actually want more airflow with like a good quality filter than you would want like in a hospital grade ULPA filter that you're getting less airflow through. In some ways you want, I think the HVAC system is a good example. So, you know, your AC furnace, anything with a vent, you're going to have a filter in there somewhere. If you put too high quality of a filter in there, you could break your system. It puts too much strain on the fan, and then you're getting less ventilation. And so you're kind of hurting yourself. And I've had clients where, you know, they're in New York, they're in a kind of a bad situation, and their hope is to reduce contaminants. But what they've done is they've saran wrapped over all their vents and stopped all ventilation. So they're stopping contaminants from coming in, but they're also trapping everything in and getting less airflow. And that's not good. So you want airflow with a good quality filter, but you don't need to go overboard with that. Yeah. So like with a home, it's going to be rated typically in a MERV, M-E-R-V scale. So something like a MERV 11, 12, something like that is going to be good. You don't want to go too crazy or else it's not going to work well.
Okay. And so the easy way to sidestep that issue is just to choose a filter with a good HEPA rating and not choose a ULPA filter or anything along those lines. Just make sure you're walking the fine line of restricting airflow while also being able to pick out enough of the contaminants out of the...
And we have to be practical in the real world. So you can put a ULPA filter in your home, but you're going to spend a lot of money to maintain that and get a fan that can handle it, right? And if you can do that, more power to you, you know, great. We know people in some places of the world, they might put $1 million system in their bedroom for their HVAC. Cool, you know? That's not practical for most people in the world. And so it's probably unnecessary as well. So, you know, let's be practical with solving these issues because you can achieve great results without going. So, but I mean, all that stuff just costs money. So we just have to be practical with what your current HVAC system is. You want to make sure you got a good quality filter in there. You can reach out to us for advice. You can add carbon into that furnace filter. And then you also have to consider things like energy costs. So in some ways, it'd be better to run your fan 24/7 if you have filtered like central air, 24/7. But then you have some energy costs there. And you have to weigh that. You know, is that practical for you as an individual? Maybe you need a standalone unit in your room that's 24/7 moving the air and filtering, And that's going to be more practical. So you emphasize your bedroom over the rest of the home, like over the garage. So that you have to like prioritize some of these situations, because it can be very overwhelming when you first step into this and you're like, okay, I know I have mold allergies. I live in this kind of home. I drive to work. I work in this kind of office. I go see my parents over here. I go travel here. That's a lot of places to tackle. Maybe just start with your bedroom and then to get a unit you could take with you sometimes.
Yeah, I was wondering about that specifically. I was thinking to myself, okay, I have a unit in my bedroom, but is that all being outdone by potentially contaminated central air since I don't have a good filter on the HVAC system? I'm wondering if...
You could be losing that battle for sure, because it's not just the square footage, it's time. So if you think about the HVAC, it's blowing whatever's in that HVAC system into your bedroom, and you have moments to deal with it. And so you could have a perfectly clean bedroom, and then when the AC kicks on, you start to feel poor. That's the opposite of what your reaction should be, because that should be your primary source of clean filtered air, is the HVAC. But in very many times, especially in parts of the country and world where humidity is high, you're going to have mold inside your HVAC. And so if you spend, $1,000 on a HEPA unit for your bedroom and then you have mold in your HVAC, it's not going to go well.
Yeah. And I want to talk more about the factors that we need to consider when choosing all this stuff, such as the humidity of your region. But before we do, is my understanding correct that the highest leverage place to start is the HVAC unit to make sure we're not blowing mold and other contaminants all around the house? And then after that, to focus on the bedroom with a HEPA or a small unit that's focused for a smaller square footage room.
If you have a vent in your wall, floor, or ceiling, and air comes out of it, that's our top priority. Not everyone has that. A lot of people rent. A lot of people might have a common HVAC system, so they don't have full control over it. So there's a lot of reasons why it's not realistic to start there. But if that is something that's going on, you have a source of air coming into your bedroom, that's where we would start, if you could. Otherwise, getting a plug-in unit that you don't have to think much about for your bedroom, get you some quick protection, would be an easy win. You can always use that. You can always get benefits from it. But the HVAC is the bigger challenge and the bigger way that you can leverage the benefits. Because if you think about like a fan, so like the bigger the diameter of the fan is, the more airflow it can move. And most of these plug-in units, ours included, are going to have fans that are this big, maybe this big. But then you've got these giant blowers that are moving air in your home. You want to make sure that is converted into an air purifier and is clean. And that's then purifying air throughout your entire home, if you have it. Not everyone has it. Not everyone can deal with it, but that's definitely the priority if you have something.
Yeah. So even if I don't upgrade my HVAC system, if I just use a plug-in unit, I'm not screwed. It's not as optimal, but it's...
And there's ways that you can band-aid the situation. So like, I've heard it a couple times. I'm a mom, my daughter's in college. Every time the AC comes on, it smells like an old man. She can't address the source in the HVAC. But you could put a filter over the vent. You could have a plug-in unit in the room. You can mitigate that. It's not an ideal scenario. Same thing I hear about where, your intake for your HVAC system might be your neighbor's patio where they smoke. And so when you turn your AC on and they're smoking, it comes right into your home. Sometimes you have to mitigate that. But yes, you're on the right track for sure.
I don't use any kind of humidifier or dehumidifier, like humidity modulating devices, but what's the role there in terms of its impact on air quality?
So specifically mold, half the battle with mold is moisture management. You can't always do that. So we have technologies that can manage mold, even in high humidity situations, like a winery aging room. You've got a bunch of barrels of wine. You have to have high humidity. But anything above 60 humidity is going to start to be a very nice place for mold to grow. So if you're in part of the country where it's high humidity all the time, the first thing we recommend for mold is to check for humidity. And you can do that with like a $5 sensor. And so if you have pockets of humidity in your home, they're eventually going to have mold, almost guaranteed. You can have too little humidity, and now it's uncomfortable for you. But in general, the lower humidity, the better when it comes to how long particulates can stay airborne, you know, how much mold can grow. But you get too low humidity, it's going to be very uncomfortable. You might sleep very poorly. There's lots of situations where you might want to introduce humidity and more often remove humidity. So you don't want a bathroom that's not venting properly. And one of the other things I would say is when I first got into air quality, I thought of it more like water, where if you put a color drop in water, it spreads out evenly. And with air quality, the more we've done testing, the more I've come to realize that it's more like clouds. You can have clouds of particulates in one part of the room. It's not in the other part of the room, just in the same room. And it's very true of humidity too. So you can have a humid bathroom and not have a humid bedroom. There's going to be leakage. And the analogy I use is you're baking cookies in the kitchen. You might smell it in the bedroom. Like it's going to mix, but it's really not as evenly distributed as I think most of us, and I certainly did, think of it as. It is very, you know, specific to your building and your situation. You could have half the house that's humid based off how the sun is, structure, you know, whatever, and half that isn't. So a lot of those things, just educating yourself about your space and whether or not you need to add or remove humidity is definitely a big and often easy win.
What's the easy approach to doing that? Like say I had little pockets in my house. Not that my house is big enough to have all these pockets, but say I had them and I wanted to remove some humidity from say three or four different places around the house. Would I just plug in dehumidifiers in those three places and constantly keep them running?
So yeah, basically some of our other conversations are going to apply to this. You either need to remove the humidity from the air or you need to evenly distribute it. So one of the ways is just ventilation, just fans, you know, moving air. One of the problems with humidity is not necessarily that there's water in the air. It's that you're going to get that concentration on surfaces. So if you have a fan, a ceiling fan or something, that's going to be drying out the surfaces. And that's going to be a big help. You don't want just damp surfaces where something like mold can grow. So some of it could just be ventilation, you know, running your fan more often, ceiling fans, other things like that. And then the other approach is dehumidifiers. So you're removing them, removing the water from the air. You can either have little plug-in ones with the little tanks that you remove. Those are pretty annoying. Or you can have things that have a tube that automatically drain all the time. Or you can have whole home dehumidifiers if you're in a really humid environment. But yeah, you basically either have to evenly distribute it. You have to deal with some structural issues. So sometimes I see a fan in a bathroom where it's pulling the moisture up and then it goes into a wall. It doesn't go anywhere. So when it was built 100% incorrectly, not to code. And so you're pulling all the humidity from your shower and you're pumping it into your wall. Probably something you need to either not use the fan or get it fixed or do something else with. So sometimes it's more complicated, but sometimes it's just, you know, using fans more often, you know, ventilating, you know, moving the moisture around so it's not just, you know, pockets of dampness.
I like that. So far, it seems pretty simple to address everything we've talked about. It's to circulate more cleaner air more frequently.
In general, more ventilation. That's something we're like pretty focused on right now is most residences in the world, but definitely in North America, have no outside ventilation at all built into the structure. So if you have an HVAC system, by and large, it's just moving the air around inside the home. And so your only options are to open the doors occasionally or to have a leaky house. So your house isn't fully sealed. So you have air coming in under windows or doors or, but yeah, more ventilation, filtered ventilation, natural mitigation, you're going to be winning. Mm-hmm.
So say I can't even do that. Is there a benefit to me just opening the windows and doors once a day or twice a day just to get some natural breeze flowing through?
Going back to the earlier stats, if they're right. So for about, say, 90% of us, the outdoor air is going to be significantly cleaner on average than the indoor air. But I would just educate yourself on your local air quality, because a lot of the air quality sources of data are going to take it from one weather station in your city. And an example of that would be a school that's located near freeways could have significantly worse air quality than the suburbs. It's very common. A lot of times the asthma rates for, you know, kids in schools by high traffic freeways are way higher. And so the air quality is going to change throughout the day, throughout the year. And so don't open your windows at rush hour. Don't go running on the road at rush hour because your activities and the time of day is going to impact what's going on. But in general, the outside air is going to be much better. And I will tell you that this year, we are having a variety of patent pending style products related to filtering that air from outside. So including nano screen window filters, instead of an insect screen, which you can stick a pencil through, it's a nano screen that's going to filter some of that air. Because for a lot of us, we like to open the windows, but you don't want to just let in mold and particulates from everything going on outside if you can help it. But yeah, so in general, it's going to be cleaner than outside for sure. But just educate yourself, because what's going on outside is going to, it's literally about 50 times worse, maybe an hour later, if you open the window before rush hour.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's a pretty simple thing to do, just to open it when you can outside of rush hour times.
And that's an example, but like you could have pollen blooms, you have wildfires, there's inversion layers. There's lots of things that are going to be very localized to your street, your town.
I never thought about the impact of exercising at certain times, because when we exercise, our heart rate increases, our respiratory rate increases. So we're going to be exchanging more oxygen, and we're also going to be absorbing more of that particulate matter and all the other.
Yeah, I remember a photo from early COVID days in San Francisco, and the sky was red from wildfires, and they had closed the indoor gyms because of COVID. And there are some people doing CrossFit on the downtown street with the red sky. And I'm thinking, you're trying to be healthy, but you're working out really hard with the worst air quality in the world, and you're absorbing that much more of the concentration. So it's been a little while since I read some of the stats on how much more you absorb, but it's dramatic. So like when you're working out, your body's bringing in a lot more, and it's true of kids too. So the smaller bodies are going to have a disproportionate impact with some things like contaminants.
Yeah. It's one of those things that's hard to really understand, because you know that working out is good for you and you feel good immediately after it, but you don't necessarily feel the repercussions of absorbing all those contaminants.
Yeah. And so there's with a lot of these things, there's not like it's not black and white necessarily. Did they get benefits from working out? For sure. But what were the negatives of doing it at that time in that way? Might've been better to stay home and do one of those video yoga classes or something, might've been better to do that versus, doing it on the street during the worst wildfire. And
David, was there any recommendations, any resources that you like to use to measure air quality, whether it's in your city, like some kind of app or service?
Yeah, I like Breezeometer, and they've been doing it for years, and it's all free. So just go on their site, and instead of using an instrument to measure the data, they layer on data sets to give a pretty good guesstimate of what the air quality is. So you're looking at traffic, satellite data, heat maps, topography, things like that, gives you a pretty good idea of what the air quality is right now, versus using a single like weather station, a point of data with sophisticated instruments. It's not as localized. So Breezeometer is a cool option. And then there's more and more options when it comes to actually measuring it yourself. I would say that we've been looking at this for years, and there's not one that I can recommend yet. Even the ones that are costing like $2,000, they're going to last for a while, and they're going to get worse. You have to maintain it, and they're not going to measure everything. So a lot of it is just educating yourself on what some of these data sets can and can't tell you for sure, and then giving just educated guesses. But there's monitors that you can find that are going to give you good readings on things like particulates, carbon dioxide. That's a good one for ventilation. If your CO2 levels are too high in your home, it's probably an indication of poor ventilation. And particulates, you can measure easily. Anything with chemicals or biologicals, there's nothing on the market that's accurate. We use multi-$1,000 commercial instruments, and they are bad. Not because they're not trying, not because they're not smart, but because it's so complicated. So we can take a commercial multi-$1,000 VOC monitor into a casino on a Friday night, and it measures no VOCs. The best way to really take air quality samples is to seal them in a vacuum container, send them to a lab, and they cost about $500 per sample. But all these monitors, they're just not quite there yet. So yeah, you got to just educate yourself best you can, but they're just not, like all the sensors, they're just not quite there yet. But you can measure things like humidity, particulates, CO2, definitely carbon monoxide. things like that. That's important. But outdoor, yeah, we like Breezeometer, probably the best practical solution that we found.
Yeah. Dare I ask about things such as like the Glade plugins or like the little trees that people have hanging in their cars?
I think probably all of us here have a good idea of what those are, but probably the best example I've had is when we've worked with casinos in the past, and instead of purifying the air from smoke, they add coconut. So you add synthetic coconut chemical to smoke. And so now you have smoky coconut, and now you've increased the contaminants, your net contaminants, without dealing with the original source of the odor. So whenever you're adding in a fragrance that's synthetic, you're just adding chemicals. So for some of us, you're going to be very reactive to that. For some of us, you might not notice the difference, but in general, like fresh breeze smell is not a good thing. new rain smell is not a good thing. So these are just synthetic chemicals that you're adding to your environment. Same with something like a new car smell. Some people love it. It's just off-gassing chemicals. So probably not the best for you, but some people like the smell, but it doesn't make it good for you or natural.
Yeah, and particularly new couches and new mattresses, those off-gas, a lot of VOCs. And if you're trying to focus on improving air quality, you want to start by not introducing things that are off-gassing.
Yeah, as much as you can deal with the source, we are huge advocates of that. You're always going to have to mitigate something. Right now, with the current innovations, things like the adhesive they use for some flooring is really bad. Might off-gas for 2 years. And for some of these things, you don't have a ton of options, or maybe your budget is only what it is, and you can't, you know, buy the thing that's three times as expensive for every material. But as much as you can, especially with cleaning chemicals, you know, cooking, you know, some of those things, you can do a lot to reduce it. Yeah, there's a lot there. But yeah, building materials are coming a long ways, and we're working a lot with building sciences to try to provide more and more recommendations and options for mitigating the source. But yeah, something like a Febreze, not to name drop specific, but you know, like anything that's like a synthetic fragrance, probably not the best to add. Same with like detergents and things that make your clothes smell clean. So you probably want the lack of smells or natural sources of smells. Yeah.
I wonder if some of these chemicals synergize in a negative way with some of the like molds and the mycotoxins and the, I forget what you call them, biologicals, to like make them grow faster or proliferate faster.
Well, with something like mold, when it's under stress, it's going to produce more chemicals. So I think there's definitely a case to be made there. From our experience, and we have a skewed perspective based off of who we talk to, but a huge percentage of our clients with mold toxicity issues have extremely high sensitivity to those chemicals. It seems like they do tend to go hand in hand with how our bodies are becoming more reactive. But it would be interesting to see, okay, if you add a bunch of synthetic fragrances to a moldy home, how does the mold react to that? Because, you know, if it's trying to defend itself from those chemicals, that's its own conversation for sure.
Well, yeah, because one thing, I saw a study on mold and how its proliferation increases some crazy amount when it's exposed to non-native EMFs of a certain frequency.
Mm-hmm. That's another area. So any points of stress, you know, for something like mold, you know, can lead to that. Mm-hmm.
Cool. Well, let's talk now about how you go about like implementing this into your own life. Like, how do you go about picking a product for the home, whether that's an HVAC filter or a point of use system, such as for the bedroom? And then after we cover like the buyer's guide to air filtration technologies, we can talk about some little practical tips you have.
Sure. So I think identifying your goals is a big one. So like where are the main pain points, what are you trying to achieve? Because if you're trying to deal with odors, probably shouldn't spend thousands of dollars on HEPA, right? So like we got to kind of identify what are the main priorities first, and then we can kind of go from there. And then doing our site has a bunch of resources on assessing your own home. And that's one of the things to consider, you know, doing a moisture inventory of your house, like looking at, you know, I've known biohackers that are going all in on biohacking and they haven't changed their furnace filter for 5 years because no one taught them. They never thought about it. So some of this is just educating yourself about something you maybe never thought about before, and seeing where maybe the pain points are in your home, your business, you know, where you sleep. And then you can basically find the solutions for that. We are very open to asking us all the weird questions you can come up with, so we can give you tailor fit answers to those. Because we do see air quality as very individualized. It's not one size fits all. There's no silver bullet technology. So I wish there was like a quick and dirty, easy answer for everybody. But we do say start with the bedroom, try to get that right. and then go from there. But yeah, identifying goals, trying to identify the issues, and then selecting the right technologies for that can go a long ways. Yeah.
What about ionization and ozone?
Most ionization in the air quality world is referring to negative ionization. And you and I talked very briefly about that before we started the podcast here. But whenever you're producing only one polarity, you're creating static. And then negative oxygen, negative O2, tends to become O3, ozone. And something like ozone, you're going to naturally find it outside on a mountain in Alaska. There's going to be ozone in the air. But when you do an unnatural concentration indoors, then it becomes problematic for people, especially with sensitivities. And so to us, ozone is a tool that you could use. We use it for some commercial applications, high chemical concentrations, where the ozone is an effective tool to break down those chemicals. But if you're building up a high unnatural concentration of ozone in your air inside, we see that as a negative, especially with our clients that tend to have a lot of things going on in their world. We tend to steer to zero ozone units. And so most ionizers are going to produce ozone. We have a technology called polar ionization, where you're producing positive hydrogen and negative oxygen. So you're naturally splitting water. So that's zero ozone producing. But so most ionizers are going to produce ozone. And a lot of times what's happening is you're creating that static bubble and then ozone. And so the ozone is the thing that's having the impact, but they're calling it an ionizer.
So mostly you want to avoid ozone unless a company has implemented the ionization properly.
That would be our suggestion. There's applications where you can use ozone to, say, decontaminate a home that had severe mold issues, or maybe someone had smoked in it for years. You know, there could be applications, but in general, our philosophy is let's naturally replicate the processes that take place outside. And whenever you're doing something in unnatural concentration when it comes to air quality, there's going to be some consequences to that in general.
I have one of your products right here called the Air Angel, and I use this in my bedroom, and it's very small and portable, so it also makes a great travel companion. Can you talk about this product specifically? Because it's also one of the more affordable air filtration.
Yeah, we actually made it for travel, like you were saying. And then over the years, we found that if someone was getting it for travel, they were using it for their bedroom, which makes perfect sense, right? And so we kind of just made it a kind of a all-purpose unit. But for us, with that unit, you have two technologies in there. One is the polar ionization. One is something called an APCO. So that's advanced hydrated photocatalytic oxidation. So I'll talk about what that is. But with both those technologies, you have no mechanical filtration. And so that's why the unit's so compact. You don't have to have a big fan that's pushing a bunch of air through a big, thick filter. And so what it's doing is you're dealing with contaminants at the source. So something like mold, you can kill it on a surface. And then you're also dealing with the particulates in the air. You're dealing with the biologicals and the chemicals. So all without the mechanical filter. So then if you combine that with any other mechanical filter, you know, your furnace filter, HEPA filter, it's only going to increase the speed of removal, and they're going to work together. But in most cases, you take that to a smoky hotel room, you plug it in, you go out to dinner, it's going to be getting rid of all that stuff. So creating a safe place for you. We'd rather you not stay in a smoky hotel room. But, you know, if you're traveling or you got an issue at home, that's what that unit would be for.
Yeah, I stayed in an Airbnb recently, and there were the little plugins like every 25 feet, and I unplugged them, but their smell was still in the air for hours, if not a day or two later. I didn't have this unit at the time, but I was wishing I did, because it would have made a huge difference. I couldn't sleep because the fragrance was so strong.
And it doesn't have to do with the price of the hotel, because we work with some very high-end hotels that don't have good air quality. And so sometimes the thought to really sterilize a room after someone stayed there, make it super, super clean, is then now introducing the highest chemicals we've ever measured in a hotel room after cleaning. So it's actually the cleaning process by some of these hotels that leads to some of the worst air quality.
How long does the Air Angel last? Like, do I have to get a new filter? Because oftentimes the actual unit itself costs one thing. It's like the razor blade and the cartridge model, where the replacement filters are like five times more expensive.
So with the Air Angel, so there's the one technology in there that you never have to do any replacement parts for life. So if you never do anything, you'd still have probably about 60% of the power. The other technology we haven't talked about, the APCO technology, is basically sunlight reacting with minerals. like it does in the atmosphere. So it's UV light, so germicidal UV light bulb reacting with a metal catalyst. We have our own proprietary catalyst in there, and that produces hydroxyl radicals. So that's inside of the chamber, and that UV bulb will eventually fail. And so once it fails, you need to get a new one, or else you're not going to have that portion of the technology. You can still use it without it. But then that bulb costs $45. So it's an APCO cell, and that's all you do. So that's every 1 to 2 years, depending on use. It could be longer, but otherwise there's no other replacement parts.
And is there any reason not to run it on full speed and with ionization on at all times?
It's 24/7 use is great. The APCO produces a slight glow inside. So for a lot of people, myself included, go all dark at night, all black. And so you can definitely not use it in your bedroom at night and still get a lot of the benefits by running it during the day. But from a pure air quality perspective, 24/7 use is great. You can run it 24/7 all the time, any size space. It's great. But then other considerations like the glow, you know, might be something you move it to the kitchen at night or something like that. And that's one of the benefits of the HVAC version that we like so much is there's no glow, no noise added. But anytime you're moving air, anytime, even like a laptop fan, you're going to hear some sound. So, and then the more airflow you can make, the better for air quality. But the more airflow you make, the louder the sound is. So that's why there's 3 fan settings. So from an air quality perspective, running it on high 24/7 would be best. From a living perspective, you got to make it work for you.
I also like that you guys didn't do what most companies do for some reason and use blue LEDs because those are terrible for sleep. You guys use green. I wish they were red, but I've actually taped over all them.
I use the little dark stickers too. In the future, all the units that I've been designing don't have any indicator lights. That was kind of like a must that you have to have from a consumer perspective for years, but we have moved away from it on like our new designs because yeah, we don't like it either. I mean, we would prefer there not to be any glow at night.
Yeah. Well, if there was going to be a glow, at least a red glow is preferable to green or blue or...
So there's even something like yellow would be better, but I don't know.
We discussed in a previous conversation some of the tips you had for people to improve the air quality when they're at home and also on the road. Do you remember any of those? Because I think you mentioned one about travel and hotels specifically that I thought was...
My favorite tip for hotels is just to ask if they have any options, because we do, like I mentioned earlier, we do work with hotels and it's frustrating to us, but I understand why from their perspective. They only implement our solutions for a portion of the hotel and they don't advertise it. So they leave those rooms with nicer air quality for people that ask for them or complain. And it's kind of sad, but they don't want it to seem like the rest of their hotel is dirty. So they don't say, here's the clean rooms. And they don't want to put clean rooms in every hotel room because it costs money. If you're traveling to a hotel, you might ask, do you have any hypoallergenic options? Do you have any rooms with different cleaning chemicals that you use or different bedding? Or do you have any HEPA products available to borrow? And a lot of times they do. And if they say they don't and they don't know what you're talking about, then you might choose a different hotel because it might be problematic for you if they've never considered it before. But even if you're staying in, you know, like Airbnb, this is the one place in the whole town you could get and they smoke there all the time. And that's where you would have the Air Angel. So whatever the situation is, you can mitigate it. We prefer you to have a cleaner start, but plug it in, go out to dinner, give it time to work, put it near the bed, try to create that safe place there where you're going to sleep, and yeah, make the best of it. Mm-hmm. And it can be very effective at that. Same with if you're going to, you know, God forbid, a hospital or something like that. You know, this is an environment you can't control and you want to have protection. It's a good option.
Well, David, if people want to connect with you and possibly try a Hypo Air product such as the Air Angel, which I have right here, how do they go about connecting with you and picking up one of these?
Well, hypoair.com is the easiest, but hypoair.com/consult. You can schedule a call with me. We can talk. That's probably the easiest way to contact me. but yeah, hypoair.com, we got lots of answers. We got 150, 170 articles on as nerdy a situation as you can think of on air quality. Yeah, but otherwise, reach out to us. Our support team can answer questions by email or have a call with you or schedule a call with me, and we'll try to talk through it.
Are you on the socials?
Hypoair is one of my mental personal healths for sleep. I'm not I'm fasting, and I recommend it. But yeah, Hypewire is on like Instagram and whatnot. For years, we were commercial, so we're not the best at social media, to be honest. But we're on there. You can find us. You can interact with us.
Perfect. Yeah, and David and team did set up a code. So if you guys use the code URBAN, that'll save you, I believe it's 10% on your orders.
Anything on the site. And reach out by email, phone. You can use the code then. You can use it in 6 months. You can use it tomorrow.
And I appreciate you for making that code one, and also for making this information so accessible and being willing to help the community out like this. All right. Well, I have one more question before we do a rapid fire round. If there was a burning of the books and all knowledge on earth is gone, but you get to save the works of three teachers, who would you choose and why?
That's a hard question. Three teachers. I'm a Christian, so I would go Bible. That'd be an easy one, right? For me. Three teachers. So that's a hard question. So that you don't have any other books in the world. There's a book called like Doctors Without Borders. It goes so deep on like, I've used that overseas, like when you're like living, and it's got basically all like the basic medical knowledge needed to survive in the world. I couldn't tell you the author. It's a group of authors. They made this book, and it's like, you're living on your own in the middle of nowhere. You got everything you need to deliver a baby, to like, you know, like deal with anything. I mean, such a resourceful book. I mean, so if there's only, I would save medical knowledge. I mean, for one thing, I think I'm too tired in the day to really give you great answers on this one. A lot of the books I read, I would not save. Like if that was ultimately like one of the three books, honestly. So I'm not sure. That's an excellent question. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any other topics that you're researching right now?
We're deep on research right now. So, I mean, for us, we're highly focused on ventilation. I mean, I'm personally looking at a lot of like light, you know, more natural like wavelengths in the home. I think it's really important. You know, I've shared a couple times, but personally, we're in the middle of a move. So a lot of materials and, you know, kind of like things related to that. But yeah, we're really big on ventilation. We're big on cleaning products right now. So we've got our Total Clean and a lot of those applications, whether it's, you know, washing machines, dishwashers, cleaning appliances, toilets, you know, there's lots of applications that we're exploring, both airborne and surface-based, that we're really into. And then we're also heavily focused. A lot of my research is on materials. So we're implementing some, I would say new, but they're actually old materials into air quality. And I think there's a lot of applications for building in some new materials into how air purification is done. So we're deep into the research phase right now because we're launching a bunch of like patents and new products coming out here soon.
All right, we'll do a quick rapid fire round now. Are there any air quality myths that you'd like to address that we haven't covered already?
There's a lot out there, to be honest. One of the things I kind of push back on is some of the mold tests out there. I think a lot of them are really bad, to be honest, and provide a lot of false positives. And even if you sent the mold test in without taking a sample, it would have mold on it. I would say that would be one of them. But there's a lot in the air quality space, and I'd probably suggest reach out to talk to me about some of those.
Okay, yeah. What is one thing that the Hypo Air tribe does not know about you?
I've done martial arts my whole life. Maybe that's something. Krav Maga, you know, Taekwondo, Jiu-Jitsu. I like physical exercise that's interesting. It challenges the mind too. So I got four little kids, do martial arts. And I would probably say the other thing is Hypewire is one of our technologies, like our products, but we have other companies too. So this is kind of part of a larger group.
Didn't realize that. Okay. Well, David, any parting thoughts for folks today?
I would just say, like, I know this gets really complicated and there's a lot of rabbit trails we go down, but just reach out to us. Tell us what you're dealing with, what you're hoping to accomplish, what bad experiences you've had with air quality, what bad experiences you've had with products. You saw this thing on TV. What do you think of it? Just reach out to us. Let us know your questions. We'll try to talk through it.
Thanks for providing that service once again. I'm Nick Urban here with David Milburn, signing out from mindbodypeak.com. Have a great week and be an outlier. Thank you for tuning in to this episode. Head over to Apple Music, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts and leave a rating. Every review helps me bring you thought-provoking guests. As always, you can find the show notes for this one at mindbodypeak.com/ and then the number of the episode. There, you can also chat with other peak performers or connect with me directly. The information depicted in this podcast is for information purposes only. Please consult your primary healthcare professional before making any lifestyle changes.